Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Actor Carol Kane is known for her scene-stealing performances in both starring and supporting roles on screen and on stage. She got her start in the theater world in the stage production of The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Her work in film earned her an Oscar nomination and a place in pop culture history when she repeated Humperdinck in The Princess Bride. And of course, on TV, Kane won 2 Emmys and a place in every viewer's heart, playing Simca Gravis on Taxi. Now, recently, she's been portraying a very different kind of New Yorker, one we all kind of recognize, that classic, old-school, eccentric you only find here. It's in the Netflix series Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Kane plays Lillian Kostuper, can never say her name right, Kimmy's landlord, and a staunch opponent of gentrification.
There goes the neighborhood. They covered that open manhole.
So we can stop carrying around an old ore to keep from falling in?
Kids, this can only mean one thing. Gentrification is coming. I mean, pretty soon we'll be out on our... because some yuppie thinks the building has good bones. We can't let them find my husband's bones.
The fourth and final season of the show aired back in 2018, but creators Tina Fey and Robert Carlock found a way to get the gang back together one last time for the new Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt movie, Kimmy versus the Reverend. It's an interactive special that lets viewers make decisions that affect the final outcome for Kimmy and company. The original cast returns: Ellie Kemper, Titus Burgess, Jane Krakowski, and John Hamm. They're joined by special newcomer Daniel Radcliffe. We are so happy to have Carol Kane here today. Carol, welcome to All of It.
Thank you, Alison. Thrilled to be here with you.
So you've said before, writing is the most important thing. It's the thing you look for when you're choosing a project. What was it about the writing for Kimmy Schmidt that compelled you to get on board?
Well, you know, it's Tina Fey and her partner, Robert Carlock, who wrote 30 Rock. And, you know, they're just so brilliant. And that's what compelled me. I knew that I would be in great creative hands, and I was not remotely disappointed. I was thrilled. And it just, you know, I got really spoiled early on in that the first television I was involved in was Taxi, you know, Jim Brooks and Ed Weinberg and Stan Daniels, and they were brilliant. And it's hard to say yes to something that's less good. And in this case, I was able to just say a wholehearted yes and feel supported. And then, of course, the cast is spectacular, you know, and just so much fun. And then we had this little cherry on the cake thing happen, which is that we did get canceled by Netflix, but then I know that Tina and Robert felt that they had a million more stories to tell, and Netflix gave us this interactive special where, you know, you mentioned a little bit about how it works, but the viewer gets to, like, every, I'd say maybe 3 or 4 minutes as the special goes along, every 3 or 4 minutes, the viewer gets 2 or 3 different choices as to where they want the character to go, and you pick one, and it completely changes the trajectory of each character and story. And then the fabulous thing, unlike real life, is that you get to do over as many times as you want. Like, if you think, oh, I wanted to see what that other... Well, you get to do it. You just get to keep doing it. That's kind of fun.
I wonder, as an actor, it's funny when you watch it because you have to take these long pauses while the and kind of stare into the camera while the viewer has to make a choice between one or two things. What was the direction you were given?
Oh, well, we don't usually, I mean, somebody usually comes in and says something stupid between stories, something, when I say stupid, I mean hilariously stupid, it's very much in haute comedy style. So, you know, you don't have to think of anything profound. You just have to wait. it's really turned out fun. And I have to say, because I am of a certain age, and so therefore akin to computer illiterate. And I thought, oh my God, this thing is going to come out, and I am not going to be able to watch it because I'm not going to understand how to, you know, interact with the computer and make choices. But they have made it so simple because they're just like, there's like little boxes at the bottom, and you just take your little hand thing and click on one, and that's it. So even I could do it, so don't be intimidated.
Oh, no, it's really fun. It's very fun to think about where the storylines are going. You know, the thing about Lillian...
I haven't seen all of them, by the way. You know, I mean, you can just watch and watch and watch and not see all of them.
Lillian she's just this great character. She's just this heightened version. I think everybody knows someone a little bit like Lillian. What did you connect with in this character as a New Yorker?
Well, a thing I remember was the first time that I got on a subway. It used to be you get on a subway on the Upper West Side and you go all the way downtown, right? And when you got off the subway, you'd be getting off in another world. You know, the neighborhood mm-hmm. would look like a completely different world than where you got on the subway. And I'll never forget the first time I got on the train on the Upper West Side and got off in Soho, and it was like the same, you know, pharmacy and the same, you know, all the same stores. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how can this be? It's gone. You know, the New York of individualized neighborhoods and passions is gone. And of course, as you know, tragically, I guess it's going more and more and more each day. Although now in this new world, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe it'll come back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But and I think that's, you know, Lillian has that experience in a heightened, passionate way, and in a way where she feels like she could do something about it, like she's not going to take it lying down, because she doesn't take anything lying down. And I think for me, the great thing about getting to play her is that she's so different than I am, in that I am constantly concerned about what other people will think, and will other people get mad at me if I say such and such, and I better shut my mouth. And Lillian just, that's not existent for her. She just, whatever comes into her head, it's out her mouth. And she could care less what you think about it, you know? So that's really a fun thing to get to play. And I certainly have met New York dames that share that in common with Lillian. It's just really fun. And of course, like I say, when I do open my mouth and say something, it's just great writing.
My guest is Carol Kane. We're talking about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy versus the Reverend. Lillian has an important role, I think, in Kimmy's life. She really plays a part in the education of Kimmy Schmidt. What does Lillian want to make sure Kimmy knows when Kimmy comes out of the bunker? For people who don't know, the main character had been kidnapped and put in a bunker, and she comes out and wants to make a life for herself in New York City.
Well, I think just sort of building on what I was just talking about, the notion that she should speak her mind as she feels it and thinks it, that she should be brave and speak her mind because she is valuable. Mm-hmm. And she certainly was learning the opposite lesson in the bunker, where she had been, you know, taught to be subservient and not speak out against the sort of religious leader, the Reverend, played by John Hamm. And so I think my role was sort of to help erase that submissive nature of hers and make her hope that she could feel free to enjoy her life, and that means being herself and being proud of it. That's what I think.
The pace of the comedy on this show is so fast. It's just like a waterfall of jokes and jokes and jokes.
Oh, my God, it's so fast. I can never, all of us in it, at the table reads that we would have, we wouldn't know the meaning of half of what we were saying. And you have to go back and really think about it. Sometimes I had no idea what I was saying until sort of after the episode was shot. And then I would say to the writers, well, what did I mean when I said such a thing? And I would have had an idea what I thought I meant, and it would have been completely wrong. But that doesn't matter. Once you make a choice, that's all you need. But it's so, as you say, it's so fast. Their minds are so fast. They're so smart. And then in this one, it's true in spades in this special, I think. Mm-hmm. Don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you have to keep up. I mean, this is the kind of show, even though it's sort of fun and at times frothy, enjoyable, you have to pay attention.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
The jokes keep coming so fast.
Yeah, and you can see it again and again and find new stuff. I mean, that was true when it was the series, and that's true with the special. Mm-hmm. And I do have to say one nice thing for Lillian in the special is that she has a lot to do with Prince Frederick, played by Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, I'm going to give it away. You get to kiss him.
Well, now, is that
at least
my
one
fault?
Version. At
I
least
mean, is
one
that
version.
My fault? I know. Isn't that. I'm like at my age to get to be forced to kiss Daniel Radcliffe. You know, sometimes life is very good, don't you think? Oh, I mean, it's so much fun. I got to sing to him and do some sexy dancing. And oh, my God, I had so much. And then I get to be. Which is really a bonus for me. I get to be his British nanny, Fiona. And I've never gotten to play kind of a refined Mary Poppins type of British nanny. I've never gotten to do that, nor would I have ever imagined I'd get to do that in my life. So thanks, Tina and Robert.
You mentioned working with Tina and Robert and what a joy that was to work with them creatively and as professionals. I mean, in your career, you've worked with huge names, Sidney Lumet and Mike Nichols and Woody Allen. And is there someone, a modern day writer or director, that you think, I'd really like to work with this person?
Well, there's a lot of them, but I mean, yeah, there are several people, but still I'm fixated on wanting to work with Marty Scorsese and Robert De Niro, who I've never worked with either of them, and I'm madly in love with their gifts and would just really, that would be, as I say, I said the cherry on the cake before, and I'll say that again, and that would be really, it's something, I really, you know, I get a little emotional when I think about it, because it's profoundly meaningful to me, the notion mm-hmm. of, because as you say, I've been so lucky. I mean, I've gotten to do two movies with Jack Nicholson, and I worked with Hal Ashby and Sidney, as you said, and then, of course, the person who gave me my life in the world of movies is Mike Nichols, and, you know, can't get better than that. So I've just been so lucky that I'm being selfish enough to say I'd like to keep getting lucky. That is, by the way, if we ever have a show business again.
We will. And now it's out into the world. It's out into the universe, Carol. Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro, if you're listening, Carol Kane's available.
Did I mention that I'd be happy to pay them? I want that on record.
It is on record. Carol Kane is in the new Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt movie, which is now on Netflix. Carol Kane, it has been delightful talking to you. Thank you for making time today.
Thank you, and take good care, everybody.